Welcome to the Views Podcast with your hosts, Nate Farmer Eden and Cole Farrell. Get ready to move even closer to financial freedom as they reveal the real estate investing strategies you need to acquire assets you can cash flow or flip. Now, let's get into today's show.
Welcome, 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 everybody. First and foremost, thank y'all so much for coming and viewing us. See what I did there? Coming and hanging with us. As always, I'm Nate Farmer Eden, your co-host. Allow me to bring on Cole, my co-host.
What's going on, Nate?
Cole, my brother. How we doing today?
We're doing good. Thursday, we're living the dream. You know, always a new day, always a new adventure.
Man, today was just wild, dude. I mean, it was just a roller coaster of emotions. We've got so much stuff in the pipeline, so much stuff that we're trying to wrap up, and oh my gosh. But, I mean, it's fine. It's fine, right?
It's fine. It's fine. We're almost at the end of the year. Things are going good. A lot of growth. So, you know what? Can't complain. It is what it is. But look, before we jump in, I want to quick hit the housekeeping item. So, first, please leave us a rating and review and help us grow, educate others. So that would be fantastic. Second, please subscribe so you won't miss another episode. And of course, third, buckle up because we're going to have a good ass time.
Oh, dude, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be amazing. All right. So today we are going to be interviewing the one, the only Jason Stubblefield, my brother. Welcome in.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Appreciate y'all inviting me on. And Nate, Cole, I'm looking forward to the discussion this evening, man.
Love it, man. Love it, love it. So, first and foremost, again, we appreciate the fact that you're here. But what got you here? What brought you here? Tell us a little bit about your backstory, who you are, why real estate. Fill us in.
Bro, I think you got to tell the viewers what's in that red cup, man. I think for all the people who are going to be watching this, they got to understand what's going on in Nate's red cup.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
man, okay. I ain't going to put you on the spot, man. We'll go ahead.
Since you did it and you done already asked, I got to fill everybody in. Look, I'm having a little bit of H2O, but it's on the rocks.
Did I hear some Henny?
Maybe a little bit, but it's fine.
To answer your question, man, really it's just been a journey for me. You know what I mean? It's like nothing was really necessarily mapped out completely. You know what I mean? Just a regular dude that sort of took the next step as far as progression is concerned. So, I mean, I don't come from money, man. My parents work minimum wage, majority of my adult life. And I sort of just was trying to find a way to get to some money, right? And so that led me to spend some time in the Marine Corps, you know, my first job, I guess if you want to call that, first career. Did that, and then afterwards I was like, well, that was nice, but I need to get some more money. And so I went to school. None of those degrees made any sense to me. You know what I mean? I was like, what's actually going to pay me? So I fell on computer science, did that for a little bit, and I was quote unquote made it. You know what I mean? Back in the day, I thought if I could make $80,000 a year, I was like, I'd done it in life. You know, I'd achieved my wildest dreams, you know, and I was making more than that. And I was like, is this it? You know what I mean? Because it wasn't the life that I thought I was going to have at all. So anyways, man, I'll fast forward. I did a little bit of single family, eventually saw that was going to take me years and years to try to really get to where I wanted to be. And I was like, I can't keep doing this. So I found out about multifamily. And after just studying, really going all in on it, I made my first purchase. And that first purchase is really what set everything up. And since then, that's been my primary focus. So since then, I've managed to purchase over 1,100 units. I'm pretty sure we'll get into that. And also, you know, left the job behind. And that's what I do full time now.
That's amazing. What a hell of a story. And it's cool because I think so many people can resonate that from, you know, figuring out what you wanted to do in life and kind of getting the degrees, going the school route, figuring out it might not have been for you. And then definitely jumping into the singles world. And Nate and I can definitely both relate to that, you know, seeing how that goes, hitting the roadblocks and just going like, man, like there's got to be a better way. And then, of course, ended up with the multi-world. So that's incredible. I want to dig in more, though. So you end up at the multifamily. What was it specifically that drew you to that? Why multis?
Time. It was just a time, right? I was very analytical, you know what I mean? So I'm looking, I was like, okay, I buy one house, I get, you know, $300-$400. How many of those do I need? Okay, 20. All right, how many am I currently buying a year? One, if I'm lucky. All right, you know what I mean? This, the math ain't math, you know what I mean? So now I'm like, this is gonna take me, you know, I'm gonna be dependent on the 401k by the time I actually get any significant wealth and all of that, man. So and once I realized the single family wasn't going to work, that's when I was just like, okay, mainly squirming. It's got to be something else. Got to be a quicker way.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Dude, you are so right. I mean, that was from the single family side. I started that as well. And then even thinking on, like, the duplexes and the tries, I was like, I need to figure out a way to go a little bit faster, because everybody keeps throwing around that term of economies of scale. And I'm like, I'm just not seeing the scale right now. I got to figure out something to make it grow a little bit faster. And so you hit on a lot of key points there. What challenges have you faced? And feel free to get into some of the nitty gritty, some of the horror stories, man. But what issues have you come starting from the single family up to where you're at now? Because 1100 is a huge number, bro. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, no, appreciate that, man. I mean, I got so many challenges, and you know, business still isn't perfect. You know, I'll try to share some that I think people really get some value out of. One of the first ones was just like, how do you get in? How do you make that first investment? All right, where's the money going to come from? And so for me, I mainly just started where I was. You know, I think a lot of people they think about multifamily like, all right, I need to go, you know, get this, I need to be Grant Cardone, I need to go buy that, and you know, 300 units right out the bat, and it's so overwhelming that you're like, I can't figure out how I can even, I can't even fathom it, right? So you don't even believe that it's possible for you. Fortunately, I was able to narrow it down and just shrink it, right? So I just started looking in Tennessee, which is where I'm from, and I was able to see, you know, 5 units, 8 units that were $200,000-$300,000 at the time. So I'm like, okay, this is not pretty, but it still is, you know, 4, 5, 8, 20 units, whatever it was, right? And so with that, I mainly leveraged everything that I had as my single family, right? I took out HELOCs on all the properties that I own, and that became my seed capital to go after that first apartment deal. So it was a little bit of just hearing people do it enough, right? I mean, I completely inundated myself with just everything multifamily, everything podcast related. If there's anybody talking about doing an apartment deal, I'm listening to it, right? No more Lil Wayne and you know, T.I. and all that when I'm running and listening to podcasts. You know, now I mean, when I was running, right? Because I like to run, but at that point, no more of that. It was all, hey, I need to learn something, right? Who's giving out some education with an audiobook or whatever. And it just sort of made it more doable. So the challenge was that, was like, where are you going to get the money from? And then even though I wasn't thinking about that, it was like, once the light bulb went off, I was like, okay, I can do something. I can make some shifts or some move. I may not go get 50 units the first deal, but I could go get a 4-unit, a 5-unit, an 8-unit, something like that.
That's amazing. And I think that's, again, so relatable and such a great path for people to follow. I know when I first started trying to get into the multifamily world, when I came from the singles, I joined a program and I was like, I want to go buy a 30 unit, 50 unit, just like you're saying. And they're like, all right, man, dial it back. You're not there yet. You know, if you find it, great, we'll work on it. But why don't you keep your eyes on the prize and just build a little bit bigger? And found a 9-unit, and that same thing was that little piece that led me to get to the next stage, which is awesome. So I think it's so cool to hear that. And another point that I love that you said is, you know, you did whatever you had to do to get to that next step. You leveraged your portfolio, you used that as seed capital, and you figured it out, which I think is amazing. So speaking of that, on the funding side, what do your deals usually look like? So I guess it differs from what you do now to, you know, what you did when you started, but what do you traditionally do for funding and financing?
Yeah. So just when I first started, I was going to burr, you know what I mean? I was going to buy a deal, increase the value, pull the money out. And the first deal really taught me that that could take a long time, right? And just because you put a pretty pro forma and plan together when you go into a deal doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work out like that. First deal didn't go as quickly as I liked it to do, didn't go as smoothly as I liked it to. And so I found myself sitting on my hands for a while. So I'm like, I got a property, you know, bumps and bruises, but I got to a point where there wasn't the opportunity really for me to pull any money out. I had to just wait to renovate units, right? And that was going to take some time. So I got bored. And honestly, reaching out to other people, this is the power of having networks. But I belong just like you, Cole, like Mitchell, like belong to some groups, grinding out some people who are doing the same thing. And just started asking, like, what should I do? And people were like, well, hey, if you know how to buy a deal, there are people who will invest in your deal. And then that is really what got me into, like, okay, well, I want to do another deal, but I don't have any money now. And so I started raising money. So now that's the model that we use, where it's you know, it'll be some of our money, but the bulk of it comes from private investors. And we go out to projects together and, you know, try to get them good returns and make it a win-win for everybody.
Oh, man, I love it. Again, so many nuggets, so many gems dropped. Utilizing OPM, for those that are out there, for those that are listening and might not know, other people's money, figuring out what it is that other folks have and what some of their issues could be and how you can solve them. So for some people, they have a lot of capital or moving capital or working capital that they can deploy, but they just don't have the time. So when you compare, when you can merge those two, I mean, possibilities are endless. So hats off to you for discovering that, man. That is amazing. And then you mentioned that you're from Tennessee and you're investing there. What markets do you currently like to invest in? Is it still in the Tennessee side of things? How do you find the markets? How do you pick them? What is it that you look for?
Yes. So for me, when I started this, I was living in the Washington, D.C. area, right? And so I was still buying in Tennessee. Now I'm in the Atlanta area, so I'm buying in the Atlanta area. We still look at Tennessee. And neighboring states like South Carolina. But what I'd say as far as like just selecting a market, I tell people really just to start where you're at, right? Three things to look for, right? Where have you lived? Where are you currently living? And where would you like to be at, right? Maybe you have a ton of friends, you got tons of family, or maybe you want to retire in some other market. And really start there. I mean, most people on their deal, they aren't bringing $50 million of private investor capital to put in the deal, right? You don't need to spend days evaluating markets to go buy your 6-unit building. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you need to find a deal that works. And so that's why I say a place either where you're at or where you have been, where deals make sense, and really just trying to get that competitive advantage, because when you know a market or when you've lived at a market, you automatically have sort of a competitive advantage. You know what that street looks like. You know what part of town is which. You have people in that market that you could call. And those are little things that, for one, give you more knowledge, but also help you be a little bit more comfortable versus going into a place you've never seen before, you haven't even visited, you don't know much about the people. You know, that could be intimidating, especially when you first get started.
Amazing. Amazing. I love the start in your backyard, and I love how you expanded into that. I love, especially we said, where do you want to be and how do you grow into that? So incredible insights. One of the things I want to jump back to is when you said you leverage a lot of your portfolio and use that as seed capital, you know, there's that piece of risk of having your own money in the deal. And then there's also the risk of having others' monies in the deal, right? So how do you manage that? What do you do to make sure that nothing goes drastically wrong and just kind of make sure everything goes as it should and account for the bumps?
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking about like on deals that we're doing now or in the very beginning getting started?
I would say both. I'm curious to hear how you manage the risk in the beginning or compared to now.
Bet at all, man. That was the beginning. I mean, it's it's really how you have to do it. I mean, most people don't realize it, but for me, it was like I researched. I looked at what a 401k was going to do, right? And I'm like, I'm broke either way. You know what I mean? Either I stay here, I keep doing what I'm doing now, and it takes me, you know, 30 years to end up broke, or I try to go not get broke, but I got to risk what I have now, which is just going to lead me to being broke. So that's why I took the single family money that I had. It's like, all right, let's take it and go out and try to do a deal. And what a lot of folks, I mean, it's the reason that, you know, like you mentioned, being around networks, being around other people is so important, because you literally are about to bet it all. I mean, not all, but close to all. I mean, and so that's something that I just haven't, I guess when everything else looks so bleak, you know what I mean? Like it seemed like more risk to not do something than it was to actually go out and take a bet on myself. Right. And so to break it fast forward into now, it's we still are always escalating, still are always going to the next level in deal, whether that's size or type of deal or whatever. But it's just mainly now getting very comfortable with our downside and then feeling way more comfortable with our upside. And so you learn that through your due diligence, through verifications, right? So we have lenders, right? Our lenders are going to look at our deals the same way we do, if not even just as strict, right? We're going to have the same thing. We're going to have, we have third parties that will review our underwriting. We know how to get insurance on properties. It's just at this point, we know what the downside risk is. And so like, okay, the chances of us losing out or going to zero on any one of these assets is very slim. You know what I mean? And now we're just trying to make sure that we can hit a base hit, a double, or, you know, hopefully that we can even do better than that. But that's the goal nowadays, right? It's just to understand the risk. In the beginning, you don't really understand the risk, but it's like, hey, I got to go for something. You know what I mean? Because you don't have time to go take a whole year to understand everything about a deal and make sure that there's absolutely no risk. By the time that you do that, the market could have shifted. All those properties are gone and somebody else has made millions by that time.
So good.
Oh man, again, jumps, dropped, crazy. I mean, so thinking about like the risk management, it just all kind of boils down to, from where you started to where you are now, you were able to generate and put systems into place. It sounds like you were able to sort of evaluate, you risked at the very beginning, and you're like, okay, now I see how underwriting is done. Now I see how lenders are, what they're looking for. I see what the criteria is going to stand for. So now I can go ahead and match that with the investors that we've got or anybody that's interested on the OPM side, and we can just merge them and push them all together, help mitigate the risk.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah.
So
this was huge. Yeah.
Man, I love it. I love it. I love it. And then thinking towards the future a little bit, is there any kind of emerging trends or opportunities that you're seeing in the market? Where do you think the real estate industry is headed? What's kind of exciting you? What's your forecast looking like?
Oh man, we're about to get into doom and gloom. everybody's gonna die.
For those that don't see it, for those that are on the podcast side, this man said doom and gloom with a smile on his face. We gotta understand why.
Yeah, I mean I say that jokingly, man, but I do think macroeconomics, and I won't try to get into the nitty-gritty of it, but just in our economy as a whole, I think that we're in a place that's very challenging and interesting, and studying over a longer horizon, you get to places where we haven't been at this point in the market for probably since the Great Depression, right? Since you've seen this level of inflation, this amount of debt, and I do think that there's going to be some significant shift within the next, I don't know, call it year to decade. But I don't think that we just keep doing business. I think within our lifetime, everybody here, right, we're going to see a major shift in the way business is conducted. With that being said, the opportunity that I see right now is mainly within affordable housing. So there's this big divide in between the haves and the have-nots, right? So the people who own real estate are now able to have equity, take that equity, put it in other other investments, right? To the tune, like, I think I just heard that there's now a congressional bill to stop institutional investors from buying residential real estate, right? They're trying to legislate what's happening because they're just buying up real estate. Regular people just can't buy houses, right? And so seeing that play out in our business, which is rents, is seeing that there's an increase, constant increase in rents. And what you're seeing is that more and more tenants are not able to afford it. And so back when I was growing up, you look at subsidized housing or affordable housing, it was the projects, it was the hood, it was like this, you know, nobody really wanted that stuff. Nowadays, I see it as an opportunity because it is, for one, these are some of the most pristine properties that you could find, right? Because they're done with a public-private partnership. I don't have to necessarily get into all of that. But it's not necessarily the person that isn't working that's living there. It's people that just need a break, right? Because they're nurses, they're clerks, right? They're working as greeters and restaurants. And these are working-class people, but they don't have, they just can't afford to pay $2,200 in rent like a lot of rents are in these major metros. So the opportunity I see, if you could find a way to provide lower than market rents to people, I feel like you'll always have a full place, right? And that's what, and there's multiple ways of doing that. Some people are doing it with co-living. Some people are doing it with just making units smaller and making more micro units, affordable dwelling units, what have you. But if you could find a way to house somebody for less than what they can get, but just by going to the typical place, I think that there's a huge opportunity in that, especially if you can do it at scale. So that's where we're focused at now. Still keeping an apartment space, but we're focused on affordable houses so that we can offer rents that are less expensive than some of the competing properties around us.
That's brilliant. And I love how your idea of, you know, seeing what the market needs and then answering that. And I think that's just a, you know, formula for success. The follow-up question to that. So if that's what you're doing now and you started in the singles, you know, from zero or a few units to 1,100, what are some of the major hurdles that you hit along the way that weren't just like random hurdles, things that people will hit as they hit certain benchmarks, I guess, or is that a thing?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a thing. I think in the beginning, it's just about how do you find a deal? How do you pull it together, right? And then once you sort of get that working, the next hurdle is going to be scaling everything that you do, right? And so team building is really what comes into play because that's how I've been able to scale, right? In the beginning, it was just me, all right? And now we're small, but there are certain things that I started to peel off that allowed me to focus on other areas. First of all, I was underwriting the deals, right? So I was able to mainly hire virtual assistants, record videos of what I was doing, train them up, and now I'm just overviewing their deals, right? So you sort of put that component aside. Then it's asset management. Now that you own something, you sort of pull that aside. And now it's more like, okay, well, how do we make strategic partnerships with capital so that we can do bigger deals going forward, and mainly just sizing up. So it's not necessarily about more, I mean, it's always more knowledge, but it's mainly more people and more specialized people. So the focus of the business now is really trying to form alliances with people that can just take pieces away so that you don't have to think about them anymore. Right. If somebody can do a job well enough that you don't have to think about it, now it frees you up to focus on the other component to help you grow and the scale. So in the beginning, it's just like learning, right? You just got to learn what to do, actually do it, right? And then get some experience. And after that, you continue to do it, you iterate over it, and then you slowly peel off pieces.
Brilliant. I love that. I love that so much. Nate, I think it's time. Are you ready?
I think so. If you want to let them know what's happening, I'm very excited for it. I can keep it up.
Right. I'm getting nervous now. Y'all know what's coming out.
Jason, here we go. So we're doing the point of view questions. We ask these to every guest, And you can answer them short, you can answer them long, whatever you want to be. But
sure.
Cue the music. All right. What separates top performing real estate investors from the rest of the crowd?
Action. Those people that just take action and go do stuff. It's better to do it, make a mistake, than to just ponder it.
What is a daily habit contributed to your personal success?
It changes, right? That's why I am. The things that I used to do as a daily habit are things that I do now. But one of the things I would say is differentiating the things that are urgent versus the things that are important, right? And part of every business is handling both of those. So two key questions I ask myself every day is, what is the most urgent thing that I need to do right now? And then what is the most important thing that I need to do right now? And if I can check both of those boxes, I probably made good progress that day.
I love that. That is such a good point. I love that. What is a piece of advice that you would give to yourself if you were starting again?
Add that music. if I could talk to myself again, what would I say? To really look inside for what I wanted to be and to go directly to that, to try to get a sense of that purpose and just to go directly there. I think that I spent a lot of time trying to put myself into other people's models because I was trying to be what I saw instead of necessarily being what I feel like I need.
What is your favorite real estate or business book?
I mean, everybody says Rich Dad, Poor Dad, so I can't say that. That's a good paradigm shift. Real estate or business, you say, right?
Correct.
I really like the Four Disciplines, 40X. I think that was a good one as far as like systems, understand what's important, understand what's urgent, keep the score, that sort of thing.
Love that. I've heard that's great. I gotta add that to my list. All right, last question for you. What is the biggest non-monetary benefit that you've gotten from real estate investing?
A better me. And the reason I say that is because the growth of trying to better yourself financially forces you to grow personally. And so the things that, you know, you have to handle, right? You're dealing with property issues, you're dealing with job, you're dealing with family. You got to be able to expand as a person to be able to handle all those things, or you'll crash out due to all the stress. And so, I'm into meditation right now. I'm into my inner focus. I'm trying to just be the best version of me because it's required. You know what I mean? In order to go to the next level, you just got to be better.
I love that. I think that's my favorite answer I've ever heard for that question. So
I agree. I've heard a lot of different answers, but this one resonates with me, and I'm glad you said it. Jason, you have survived the POV. You've survived it. We can turn the music off now.
Music, man. Yeah. That's...
It wasn't that bad, was it?
Nah, y'all good? Yeah.
Okay.
I've had worse.
We always try not to crack up when we start playing the music. It's so hard to hold a straight face.
Yeah. That... The music got me, man. I'm like, this is funny.
Oh, I love it. I mean, having you on, hearing about your backstory, learning about the transitional pivot between going the traditional college route and getting into like kind of computer science, and then realizing real estate was going to be able to get you to point Z way faster than it would have been if you would have decided to take single family or the traditional 401k, and you risked it for the biscuit. You're like, we just gonna go. And you emerge with 1,100 plus units. Brother, that is impressive. Hats off to you, man. I mean, it's stories like yours. It's the inspiration. It's the fact that you're willing to give back. You've got your mastermind group. You've got the multifamily. You have the multifamily code that you've got going on. You've got and built consistent systems, proven track record. Hats off to you, man. We are floored, and it's an honor, pleasure, and a privilege to have you on with us, man. So thank you so much for joining us on Views.
Yeah, salute, brothers. Appreciate y'all.
Likewise. Last question for you before we all log off. Do you have any last minute thoughts, nuggets, gems, anything that you just want to say before we head out of here?
Just go do some shit. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, the thing, like, the people that are stuck are just the ones that aren't doing it. There's never a perfect time. There's never a perfect way. My first deal, I didn't know. And even if you screw up, like, those learning what not to do is just as valuable as learning what to do. You know what I mean? So you really never lose, but at least you get to say that you did something.
So good.
Took words right out of my mouth. I couldn't have said it any better. So with that being said, and for those that are listening on the podcast, those that are watching on the YouTube side, thank y'all so much for joining us for another amazing, amazing episode. Tune in. Please check out all of his socials. All of his information will be posted below. I know we on here. Get home safe. For those of y'all that are not, y'all take care. Have a wonderful night.
Thanks for listening to Views. If you enjoyed today's show, take a second to hit the like button. And if you haven't already, subscribe to our channel so you never miss an episode. Until next time, peace and love.